Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're talking your taxes and your tax returns today. Steve Schmidt, Certified Public Accountant, Managing Director in the Madison Office of RSM McGladrey, and one of our regulars for several years now. He does a wonderful job answering your questions and mine, as a matter of fact, about taxes. And I hope you'll join in with your questions as you think about them. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Steve with us by phone today. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Well, excuse me. I've got a little scratchy throat here. Not too bad. Glad to have you with us. This is not the time of year that you want to be sick, is it?
No, that's for sure.
Lots going on, and already many callers online. Anything in general you want to say before we get started about anything new this year?
Well, there's quite a bit of things that were new or extended. One of that's got a fair amount of attention here recently is the home buyer's credit. That was to phase out late last year, but that was extended through April 30th, as long as you contract to buy a home by April 30th. And then as long as you close by June 30th, you might be eligible for a first-time home buyer's credit. In addition to the first-time home buyer, they also extended the credit to other individuals who have owned a home for at least 5 years out of the last eight. So, you know, prices are down, mortgage rates are favorable, you've got a credit to enhance the affordability. So if you're in the market for a new home
good
and your income isn't too high, now might be the time to take a look.
Lots of callers online. Let's go to Annabelle in Fort Atkinson first. Annabelle, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much for answering my call. I have two questions. One relates to the federal form. I had a new efficiency gas furnace put in this summer, and I understand that I should be able to take a credit for that, and I have sent for the form. In looking at it, I don't quite know where that's going.
Yes. The form for that would be a Form 5695.
Yes.
And that's for the residential energy credit.
Yes.
So if you get that form and the instructions, that should walk you right through it. For the credit is 30% of up to $5,000 of qualifying expenditures for a maximum of $1,500. Likely a furnace wouldn't get you to the max, but
no. And I want to ask a question too. I assume that it's okay to use the amount that is on the invoice. I did happen to get a couple of rebates.
Oh, good question.
You know, I think that's correct, but I've not looked at that question. But it's normally your cost of the item,
yeah.
And but I haven't had occasion to look at that issue.
Said that it was I think from the company, and it was for purchases, I don't know, between several months, and I was within
mm-hmm.
that window.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had $150 back from that, and then I believe there also was a Wisconsin one.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be doing it without getting into a problem with it.
Right.
But, you know, my statement, my cost to the company when I originally purchased it was $4,100.
Yes. So I have not looked at that issue, but that's a good question, and so I can't be real definitive on that. But
I'm sorry, we can't help you on that
yeah.
one. You're on the safe side. If you were to be on the safe side, you'd put in the amount that you actually paid after the rebates, I assume. But might bear looking into further to see if those.
Yes, if you go to IRS.gov. You can go to the forms selection there. Then there's the form 5695 is the one that's relevant, and then there's a complete set of instructions, and those instructions may comment on that. Although I've read those in not recently, I've read those in the past, and I don't recall anything about that.
Good luck, Annabelle. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Joseph in Bark River, Michigan, we go to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. See, if a person had medical problems, say cancer, and a group of individuals got together, and no formal organization, just a group of individuals got together and started a fundraiser for him. And
started a what?
Like,
a fundraiser?
Fundraiser,
a fundraiser,
okay.
To help him with his medical expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And would any of that money, them funds, be taxable to the individual to receive the results of that fundraiser?
Likely not, because what you really have is you have other individuals making a non-deductible gift to another individual.
Yeah.
So I don't see that would be gross income. I would see it as an excludable gift.
Excludable gift. There you have
mm-hmm.
it. Thank you, Joe, for calling. Appreciate it.
And just like the individual is not a qualifying charity, the individuals could not deduct what they would give to this needy individual.
All right. Jim in Wausau, we'll go to you now. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a curiosity concerning the report on a Form 1099-G that the state of Wisconsin sends concerning my refund from last year and how much is taxable this year.
Okay.
In every instance, the amount they report to the federal government is a couple dollars more than the actual refund. They show the actual refund, and then they have another line for sales and use tax, which in this case happens to be $3.
Mm-hmm.
So reporting to the feds, a little more than I actually got. Why is that?
Okay, basically is, let's say before the sales tax on your 2008 return, your refund would have been $500.
Okay.
But you owed $10 of sales tax on out-of-state purchases.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So you only received back $490. Effectively, you received back $500 of income tax, and out of that, you paid a non-deductible $10 in sales tax. So the $500 reporting of the refund on the 1099-G would be correct. Although you only got $490 in cash, you got $500 because you had $490 of cash, plus your sales tax liability was taken care of. So there's your $500.
Oh, that's how it works. Very interesting. Thanks, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, sometimes if you have an underpayment penalty, you'll have a similar result. In the example, you had a $500 refund before a $10 underpayment penalty, you would only get back $490, but your refund would still be $500.
Gotcha. Let's take some more calls. By the way, you can join in, too. We have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty fast at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. But we'll go to Jim in Oregon, Wisconsin now. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a comment on the furnace rebate. I just called my contractor on Tuesday. You get the rebate according to the full amount of the cost of the furnace. You don't deduct the rebates or the energy tax credits from Focus on Energy.
Perfect.
So that's how you come up with your percentage.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Sure. And I've got a question.
Sure.
We're trying to lower our adjusted gross income because we make too much money. My wife contributes to a Roth IRA, so that doesn't reduce the amount that we can, it doesn't reduce her total income, so we don't have a reduction there.
That's correct.
If we, how much can we contribute to an IRA to help lower our adjusted gross income?
Well, are you covered by employer plans?
I am not. I'm retired and work a part-time job, and she is covered by a 401k, but that 401k is a Roth IRA.
I see.
So that doesn't reduce her income at all.
Right.
If it was a traditional IRA, yeah, it would.
The traditional IRA limits are $5,000, and then if you're over age 50, another $1,000.
Okay, so that covers that. So it would be $6,000 total.
So it would be $6,000.
Okay.
If there is no coverage by either spouse, then you could each do the $6,000. If your spouse is covered and you're not, there are phase-out limits on a joint return, for example, if you're covered by an employer plan. If your income, adjusted gross income, exceeds $109,000, you can do no deductible IRA, and it gets phased out from $89,000 to $109,000 of income. For a joint return where only one spouse is covered, then the income phase-out range, instead of $89,000 to $109,000, is $166,000 to $176,000. So if you're combined adjusted gross income is less than 166, but more than 109, and your spouse is covered under an employer plan, but you are not, then you likely could do a deductible IRA contribution.
Okay.
Well, we should be fine then. Great.
Okay.
Thanks for the help.
Yep, thanks
welcome.
A lot for calling. And Tom in Windsor, just move right along here. Let's go to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hey, boy, that was quick. I just called. Hey, I'm wondering, is there a website anywhere or booklet or something where I can go to, or anyone can go to, and look up deductions by profession, i.e., I'm a truck driver, and the only deduction I know, since I'm a company driver, is I can deduct $30 for every night I do an overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, is there somewhere I can go and, like, look up truck drivers, and it lists all the deductions?
Potential deductions, you mean.
Are you an employee? Are you an employee?
Yes, I'm
you're not self-employed. I guess what I would do is the IRS has some publications. Just go to irs.gov and take a look at their publications. I usually don't access those. We have other research services that we use. But there would likely be publications on employee business expenses.
Okay.
And so just you could go in and irs.gov and type in employee business expense, and likely a publication will come up. And I don't know what the number is off the top of my head. But
sure.
I can look it up, I'm sure.
Sure. Yeah, I think you'll find something there. Another thing I would suggest to you, employee business expenses are deducted on Form 2106.
Okay.
So that might be a good place to start. Take a look at the instructions to Form 2106, and that will have some useful information for you as well.
Perfect.
Great. Okay. Thank you. You folks have a good day.
Yep. You too, Tom. Thank you for calling. And Ron and Baraboo, on to you now. Hi, Ron.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Great.
That's good. Say, I started working on my taxes last night. I got a little confused. I had nothing but unemployment income last year. And it's reported to me on a 1099 and to the IRS, of course. And you don't put it on line one of the EZ. You put it on line three. Now, according to all of the computations and worksheets, I would be eligible for an earned income credit. But does that pertain to solely unemployment income?
Okay. When it comes to the earned income credit, that's an area that I don't work with. But if you go to the IRS instructions, there's about 25 pages in there, including some checklists and some charts to walk you through to determine if you're eligible. And so get a 1040 package. You can get that at irs.gov. And as I said, in there's about 25 pages covering the earned income credit, and you just follow those flow charts through, and that will give you the answer. While you're on the line, I just want to mention that's something new. Larry asked at the top of the hour what was new for 2009, and that's one of the items that is new. Everybody gets to exclude the first $2,400 of unemployment compensation from federal taxable income for 2009. And then Wisconsin has had an old possible exclusion for many years. The federal exclusion doesn't apply to Wisconsin, but if you go to the instructions, if you have limited income, the unemployment compensation may not be taxable or may not be taxable in full, particularly if on a joint return, if your income is less than $18,000, or on a single return, if it's less than $12,000. The Wisconsin instructions have a worksheet in there that'll walk you right through to determine the taxable and excludable amounts on your Wisconsin return.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Super. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And, Steve, we're getting a lot of calls in from people who are wanting to know how you get that first-time home buyer's credit.
Okay. You got to buy a house, but
yeah.
you're talking about the logistics on your return.
Right.
It's you need to file Form 5405, so get Form 5405, and if you're eligible for the home buyer credit, you cannot electronically file your return. You have to file it paper because when this credit first came on in 2008, I believe it was, there was a lot of fraud. People were claiming the credit when they didn't really buy a house. So now you need to, along with the tax return, you need to submit a copy of your closing statement, the HUD statement, Form 1, Form HUD-1. But so that's the form that you use, Form 5405, for claiming the credit.
Okay.
One other thing I'll mention here is if you closed in 2009, you can claim the credit in 2009 return. But if you buy a house this year, in 2010,
yeah.
If you want to, you can claim that credit on your 2009 return.
All right. There you have it. Steve Schmidt, a certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey, as we talk taxes with him today. Cheryl Gasser, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back with Steve Schmidt. And Steve, we had an email from Gregory who wonders, how long can you list full-time college kids as dependents? Is there a residency requirement, time of residency in your home, that sort of thing?
Basically, age 24 is under age 24. And so if they're full-time students and under age 24, and if mom and dad provide more than half the support for the child, then mom and dad can claim the child as a dependent. Temporary absences, such as when you're away at school, don't count. They're not a problem in claiming the exemption, personal exemption deduction.
And another email, Phyllis says, my husband and I invested $4,000 in a Roth IRA about 10 years ago. Last year we cashed it in because we'd lost the majority of its value. The value was under $800 when they cashed it. Upon receipt of the information from the investment company, there was nothing stating the original investment. How do we now claim a capital loss?
You won't claim a capital loss. Intuitively, you would think it would be a capital loss, but the IRS has said if you put more into a Roth IRA than you get back, you take the loss as a miscellaneous itemized deduction.
Okay. Dennis and Toma, on to you now. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning, gentlemen. My question is, if you receive disability Social Security, is that money that you receive both federally and state taxable? And I'll listen off to air.
You just go through the, if your income is low enough, it will not be taxable. So go through the Social Security worksheet in the IRS instructions. And that will give you your answer. For Wisconsin, Wisconsin no longer taxes Social Security benefits, so it'll be exempt for Wisconsin.
All right. There you have it. And on to Larry in Madison. Hi, Larry.
Hello. I have a question. I'm putting in a solar electric system, and I understand there's a tax credit. And I was wondering if I can value my own labor for installing that system as part of the credit.
No, it has to be out-of-pocket cost.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Jill says we itemized our taxes in 2008 because we had high medical expenses. This year we have a 1099-G and are required to pay tax on our refund from last year, state and federal. This hasn't happened to us before. Can Steve explain why this is so? And if I also, if I amend our 08 return to be not itemized, will this change our tax on our refund?
Okay, basically, if you itemize your deductions and you reduce your taxable income by an itemized deduction, and it saves you tax on your federal return, and then in a later year, you get a refund of something that you deducted, then you got to include that refund in your taxable income. For example, let's say an individual paid $5,000, had $5,000 of Wisconsin withholding in 2008, ended up with a Wisconsin liability of only $4,500,
okay,
and received a refund of $500. Well, the bottom line is you really only paid $4,500.
Yeah.
Since you're a cash basis taxpayer, you deducted the $5,000 on 2008. Well, when you get the $500 back the next year, you need to put it in income because you didn't really end up paying $5,000. You only paid up for, paid $4,500. So that's the philosophy. If you deduct something and you get a refund of it, then you got to include that refund in taxable income. One thing I would warn for not the real low-income taxpayers or not the real high, you know, with a million or more of income a year, but for, you know, a lot of middle America making
right.
$100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year, although the refund theoretically is taxable the next year, if you didn't benefit in 2008, it's not taxable. And if on your 2008 return you were subject to the alternative minimum tax, you didn't get a full or any benefit from the Wisconsin tax that was refunded, and therefore in that situation the refund may not be taxable, even though Wisconsin would give you a Form 1099-G. So if you benefited from the deduction in the prior year, it's taxable. And even though you deducted it and it reduced your taxable income, if you had alternative minimum tax in the prior year, then you probably didn't benefit from the state deduction and don't need to include it in income. So you need to watch that.
Very interesting. Karen and Franklin, we're on to you now. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am wondering about HSA contributions. As of January of 2010, my husband has an HSA insurance plan, and he is covering our two children. So he has a family plan. I have a single plan. What I'm wondering is, can he contribute to his account? Can he contribute the full family amount, the total? And can I then contribute the full single amount so that we end up with... I don't know. I think it would be something like $7,000.
No, on a joint return, there's a joint limit, and for 2000, I don't know what the 2010 maximum is, but for 2009, the family limit is $5,950. Now, is your husband's being sponsored through an employer at all, or is it just he's paying the funds himself?
It's our own. Neither one is employers.
Okay, so you're making it out of pocket.
Right.
But the form you use for the HSA is Form 8889, and if you walk through that form, you'll see there's a max for family coverage of $5,950. And then if you're over age, doesn't sound like you are, but if you're over age 55, there's an additional amount that can be deducted.
Okay, so even though he has a family, he could contribute that maximum, but then I couldn't contribute any to my account.
Right.
Okay, or we could split them between.
Yes, you're subject to the overall maximum on a joint return.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you for calling. And let's go to Frank in Barron County. Frank, hello.
Good morning. I hope this, I apologize if this question has been asked. It's on the tax credit for home purchase. I just wanted to, I don't think I'm qualified, but I just wanted to double check. I've owned a house for about 10, 12 years, and I sold it in spring of 08 and purchased another house, which I still own, and just recently purchased another house that was out of state. And just wondered if I know I wouldn't be eligible for the $8,000, but I thought I might. You know, would I be eligible for that $6,500? And
okay, to be eligible for the $6,500,
yeah,
the house has to have been purchased after after November 7th, I believe the date is 2009.
Okay, that my second house was purchased after that,
and it has to be a principal residence, not a second home.
No, it's not.
Okay, it has to be your principal residence.
Okay. Well, then I'm not eligible.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, there you have it.
And then the other requirement there is that you lived in your old home 5 out of the 8 years before you bought the new home. So
okay, there you have it. Lisa in Deerbrook, on to you now. Hi, Lisa.
Hello, how are you today?
Great, thank you for calling.
I have a question. We bought our house 3 years ago, and we were wondering if we qualify for the tax credit that's going on.
No, you do not.
Unfortunately.
Aw. Aw. And I have one other question.
Okay.
As far as I bought a used vehicle, and I'm an EMT, am I able to write off my used vehicle I purchased?
To the extent you use a vehicle, I assume you're paid as an employee?
It's a volunteer.
It's a volunteer. For like a municipality?
Yeah.
Okay. Then it wouldn't be an employee business expense, but there's a charitable mileage deduction of 14 cents per mile.
Okay.
So you get to deduct that?
Yes.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. David in Madison emailed us and wonders, what do you ask for when you're looking for a CPA to do your taxes?
What do you ask for?
Yeah,
okay.
What kinds of, I suppose, you know, how do you find someone?
Sure. I guess if you're an individual, you know, you want to make, a CPA can be many different things. I mean, you can be a tax CPA doing, you know, where you primarily practice taxes. You can be an auditor and not do taxes at all. You can be in the consulting area. So there are some CPAs that only do taxes. That's my case. There are CPAs that both do audit and financial work and taxes. So what I think you want to do is get to a CPA who's capable with your particular issues, and if you're more involved, if they're more involved, I'd be inclined to lean to a CPA that specializes in taxes as opposed to does taxes as a sideline. But even within the tax area, there are those that might spend more time on business taxes than individual taxes.
Yeah.
So you need to find out what your issues are, and find the right person for your particular
situation. Sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you have a business associate or a friend who uses a CPA, talk to them, see if they're happy. Your banker, your lawyer, many times would know. I can say most, for example, I practice in Madison. Most of the CPA firms of any size in the Madison market have a number of CPAs that would be capable of helping most individuals out with their tax return. So if you don't know of anybody individual, you know, call the firm, ask to talk to someone about your particular situation, and they'll get you to someone. That happens to me regularly. And if it's one that I want to take, I'll take it myself. Or I've got a number of tax managers or supervisors that are very capable, and I'll try to line a prospective client up with the appropriate person on our staff to take care of them.
All right. There you have it. We turn to Matt in Middleton next. Matt, thanks for calling. Hello.
Good afternoon. I guess I'm following up on the house credit thing again as well. Is there anything for those of us who have purchased a house within the last 3 years but don't qualify for any of the credits? My wife and I are having our sixth child, and we've had three over the last couple of years. So we need out of our 1,800-square-foot house and into something bigger.
Yes. Now, yes, three. If the first-time home buyer credit, you cannot have owned a house for the last 36 months before you buy the new one. So if you owned a home in the past and you didn't own one for 3 years before you bought, you'd be eligible for what they call the first-time home buyer credit.
So if we bought our first home in October of 2006, would we still qualify for anything?
No, and you still own it.
Right.
Yeah, so you're not a first-time home buyer.
Right.
Because you already have one. So you can't have owned a home for 3 years before you close for the first time.
Is there any
In November,
instance?
They added a homeowner's credit, a home buyer's tax credit, for those existing homeowners if you have owned a home for at least 5 years out of the last eight. And doesn't sound like you meet that requirement either.
No, we're kind of...
So you're
kind
in between,
of
yeah.
You're stuck.
I don't think... No, there's nothing... There's no credit available for you on the home purchase. Now, if you make some energy improvements, there's some possibility there for you, but there's no credit on for the purchase.
All right. There you have it, Matt.
Okay.
All right. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. The number for you to call to join in, by the way, is 1-800-642-1234. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Jay and Madison's up next. Let's go to Jay. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So my question is, I have been unemployed and getting unemployment benefits from the state of California.
Okay.
Who do I pay state taxes to?
You live in Wisconsin?
Yeah, Madison.
Okay.
And I've been in Madison since July and moved here from Columbus, Ohio. All my income for 2009 has been unemployment.
Okay.
Oh, boy. You're getting unemployment from California.
Yeah, I was employed by a company in California. And so basically the state of Ohio said that I should get all my unemployment benefits from California.
Mm-hmm.
California has been paying me.
Yes. Okay, I've never had this situation. I'll tell you this. The resident state will tax you on your worldwide income. So if you properly establish domicile or residence in Wisconsin...
Yes, we own a house now in Madison.
Yes, okay. Wisconsin will tax that income. If California can properly tax you on that as well, and that's a possibility, then Wisconsin would give you a credit for the tax you paid in California. And I don't know the answer to this off the top of my head, but...
that would seem to be the case.
It emanates from California.
Yeah.
From California employment. And so it's likely that California would tax that. But you'd want to do some research on that to confirm that.
But would I end up having to pay taxes in California...
Ohio and Wisconsin.
Well, when did you live in Ohio?
Basically, until the July 27th is when we purchased a house in Madison.
Yes. So, as I mentioned, same thing would apply to Wisconsin. If you're a resident of the state in which you live, that state normally will tax your worldwide income. Mm-hmm. But if that income is also properly taxable by another state, the resident state will give you a credit for the tax paid to that foreign state. Either Wisconsin will give you a full credit, okay?
Okay.
Some states will limit the credit to the lesser of the tax on that income you paid in your home state or the tax you paid in the foreign state.
Okay.
And most states do it that way, but since Wisconsin is a fairly high tax rate state, for some reason Wisconsin will give you a full credit, even though like a California rate might be higher than Wisconsin. So, and I don't know the answer to this question, so your threshold question is, will California tax that income? And since it's coming from California source wages, unless there's a special rule, that may be taxable. You just need to check that out. And then if it is taxable out there, you also report it on your resident state return and then take a foreign tax credit.
All right. There you have it. Thank you, Jay, for calling. Appreciate it. Julie in Milwaukee, it is your turn. Hi, Julie.
Yes, hi. I relocated back from Washington State to Wisconsin at the end of September. Washington State has no state income tax, so all the years out there, I've never had to file state income tax, just a federal. I have my W-2 from income that I earned in Washington State. I've earned no income in Wisconsin in 2009. So do I, in addition to filing my normal federal, do I have to file any Wisconsin income tax return for 2009?
You had no Wisconsin source income?
None at all.
So if you did, then you would file a one NPR, your Wisconsin column would be zero. So, yeah, no, if the threshold for filing Wisconsin return is like $2,000 of Wisconsin source income, so if there was no Wisconsin source income, you didn't earn any interest or dividends?
Nothing.
Nothing.
No, nope, it's just an interesting move, but
okay.
Nothing's coming going on.
Yeah, no. There would be no Wisconsin source income, so you shouldn't need to file.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Sarah in Madison emailed us. She says, I have a question about the government retirement tax credit. 58 years old, retired from the UW. Collecting the state pension as a UW employee, I paid into Social Security during my working life, but I'm not eligible to receive it yet. can I take the government retiree tax credit? That's a good question.
Government retiree tax credit. I'm not.
The federal government has, and she should go to the. I know this. I've looked into this myself. The federal retirement program, the government retirement program, has a section on its website that talks about this very thing. And there's a formula that you can work through to see whether or not you qualify. And I guess that's what I do. I'd go to the federal retirees website, look under the tax credits, and there's a nice form there. That'll, as you say, Steve, it'll walk you right through.
Okay. No, that's one that I'm not familiar with, so I'm glad you could handle that one, Larry.
Let's go to Debbie in Manitowoc. Hi, Debbie.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I purchased or had to replace the furnace in my home, which I've owned almost 9 years now, towards the end of December of 2008. And I know there's a tax credit of, what is it, $1,500?
In 2008, there was no credit.
No credit.
Okay, I know. It was like December 15th when I had it installed.
Yeah. There was a credit for 2007, 2008, there was none, and now it's back for 2009 and 20.
Story of my life.
Yeah.
All right, Debbie, thanks for calling. Oh, boy, can't please everybody. That's too bad. So, you know, but when your furnace goes in December, there's no waiting until the next, 2 weeks for it to get a new one.
Really, really strange tax policy, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, why does she not get the credit? Somebody did it a week or two later, and they get it. You know, for example, those that bought the house in 2008, they had a $7,500 credit. They got to pay it back over 15 years at the rate of $500 a year. You buy it in 2009, you get $8,000 credit, and you don't have to pay it back. I mean, our tax system is in a sad state of affairs. But so it goes.
That's where we are.
Yeah, that's where we are.
Let's go to David LaCrosse. We'll go to you in just a minute. Steve Schmidt, a certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey, a guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll take some more calls here as we move along. We don't have any emails in front of us, so let's go to the phones. Paul in Fall Creek, you are up next. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you, and good morning. First time I've ever called. I'm calling. I'm proposing to put up a 10-kilowatt wind generator. What tax credit would I have in Wisconsin?
You...
On the Wisconsin side, or are you talking the federal?
Both.
Yeah, I don't know what Wisconsin has, but if you get the form 5695, there are credits for alternative energy sources, and I don't know exactly what that credit would be, but get the form 5695,
right.
And it's generally, you're talking, you said photovoltaic?
No.
Solar?
Wind generator.
Wind. I'm sorry, I missed wind. I'm just looking down a list of eligible. So you've got, the heat pumps, geothermal, photovoltaic, fuel cells, residential small wind, 100 kilowatts or less, 30% of the cost.
For federal,
yes.
Okay.
And there is a state as well, and I'm blanking suddenly on the website to go to to find that.
I don't believe that's part of the income tax return, though. That must
no,
be a separate filing.
That's a separate thing. I'm just blanking. It'll come to me. it'll come
yeah.
to me. But it's a credit of some sort that you can get.
And all right.
So stay listening, Paul. We'll come up with something for you on that.
And you might just do go to Google or Yahoo or something and do a web search. Put in your keywords and see if it pops it up. But that's not one that I've dealt with on an income tax return here.
All right. Donna in Madison, we turn to you next. Hi, Donna. Thank you for calling. Donna, are you there? We lose Donna? We must have lost Donna.
I'm here. I'm here. I'm sorry. Hi, Steve. This is Donna. I think you know me.
Hi, Donna.
But I am calling to find out. My mom, who is 71, lives with me. She receives retirement, and she has a government annuity that she gets. Can I claim her as a dependent?
Basically, to claim somebody as a dependent, you have to provide over half the support. And then if their gross income exceeds the personal exemption amount, which for 2009 is $3,650, if her gross income exceeds that, then you would not be able to claim her as a dependent.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And on to Hinowee in Madison. Let's see here. First, we have to. There we go. Oops, pushed the wrong button. Let's go to this button here. Here we go. Sorry, Hinowee?
Yes. Hi, how are you, Steve?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for you. I bought a house, me and my sister, in 1990 in Chicago. And then I moved to Madison in 2000, and I bought a house, me and my wife, last year. My wife is a first-time home buyer. Is she eligible for that tax credit?
You bought it last year?
Yes.
So you were a previous homeowner. Was it your principal residence?
Yes.
In Chicago?
Yes.
Yes. And now I'm a resident in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I moved here in 2000.
Okay, so were you married then at the time?
In 2000, yes, I got married, and then we stayed here, me and my wife, for, like, you know, till now.
But you weren't married when you bought the house in Chicago?
No. That was me and my sister.
Okay.
And she didn't own the house?
Your wife.
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know the answer off the top of my head on that one. And it could be necessary for you to file separate returns, but I don't know. I just haven't had that situation. So, but if you see if there's any answer to that in the form 5405, I know when the original home buyer credit came out, the IRS issued it was either a notice or a revenue ruling on situations such as yours, and I just don't remember what the conclusion was on your particular situation. But I'm sure there's guidance out there. It's just I don't know the answer off the top of my head.
Can't help you with that one. Sorry, Hinowee.
Yeah, so I guess get the 5405 instructions.
Okay.
So if you go to IRS.gov, they may address your situation. It's just I don't know off the top of my head what your answer might be on that one.
All right, let's go to Al in Rhinelander then. Al, hello to you.
Hello there.
What can we do for you?
Just a quick question, and that is, would I have better results for filing state and federal tax returns by using like an online service like TurboTax rather than using the state and federal websites to fill out the easy forms?
Well, I would hope that if you fill them out properly, either one would give you the right answer. So I don't know why one would necessarily be superior to another. Now, it's quite possible that the free websites would be more limited in capabilities. So if you have more complexity to your situation than what the free websites might handle, you might need to go to, one of the
private ones.
Packages out there, yes.
Okay. All right.
All right, thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Alex in New Glarus, hello.
Hi. Thanks for the service. I do appreciate it.
Sure.
My question is I have a cabin in northern Wisconsin that we rent out to vacationers. We own it with another family. They own half of it. We own half. It's set up as an LLC. And so, it's just been steadily renting to, week-long vacations kind of thing throughout the year. We're going to sell our half, I believe, to them, and I need to know a couple of things. I'm hoping to know what the time frame is that I have to reinvest. And if I understand it right, it might be different for a business property than it is a residential home.
Okay, let's get the threshold question there. It sounds to me like you've been renting the property and you've been treated as a rental property and not personal use?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Good.
And then you want me to ask the second question or
should we? No, let's take the first one then. All right. If you have a rental property and for real estate, you can exchange real estate held for business use or investment for other real estate held for business use or investment. Rental is business use for this purpose. Okay, but you can't trade for a personal use property. So you couldn't trade this property for, say, a second home you're going to occupy somewhere and not rent. All right, it doesn't work. You've got to be business and investment on both sides. Now, there's what's called deferred like-kind exchange rules. And it almost lets you sell and buy, but you got to run through some gymnastics. Before you sell, you give notice to the buyer that you're going to sell using a deferred like-kind exchange. And then you got to usually get what they call a qualified intermediary involved. Title companies are the most prevalent in providing that service in our area. And the title company closes the transaction, holds the funds. After you close on the old relinquished property, you have 45 days to identify a replacement property. And then you have to actually close within 180 days. And if you do that, then you could qualify for what's called a deferred like-kind exchange under Section 1031.
Okay.
Okay. Now, so what you're saying is you know, I could possibly, if I use that format, do, you know, buy another cabin to rent out.
Yes.
However, or similar rental property.
It could be land. It could be an office building. It could be farmland. It could be a multifamily apartment building. It can be any. As long as it's real estate in the United States, it'll probably qualify as like kind.
Now, I've owned this place with them about 10 years. I would say it could be at least 8, and it's 10. And we've, you know, had depreciation on the place. You know, the contents and the, I don't know, the whole thing, I guess, over that time. So, I, you know, sort of two questions in one in this is that if I decide not to buy a second rental property, am I subject to capital gains? And then secondly, you know, what happens from the deductions that I've had through depreciation?
Sure. Okay. You can have potentially three characters of gain. Let's say you had some furniture and you had $10,000 of your share of the cost and you fully depreciated it, okay? So you got no basis left. And then when you sell it, you say that, all right, that furniture is now worth $3,000. Your basis is zero, you sell it for $3,000. That's going to be called Section 1245 recapture, which is ordinary income.
Okay.
All right. On the real estate part, let's say your cost was $100,000. You took $10,000 of depreciation, so you got $90,000 in basis. So you sell it for, let's say, $130,000. $130,000 minus $90,000 of adjusted basis gives you gain of $40,000. To the extent you've taken depreciation, that part of the gain comes back. It's called unrecaptured Section 1250 gain. That comes back at a 25% rate. So $10,000 in my example would be taxed at 25%. The balance of the gain on the real estate of $30,000 is taxed at a federal rate of 15%. Wisconsin doesn't distinguish between the 15% and 25% gain. It's all treated as long-term capital gain, on which you pay tax on 70% of the gain at your regular rate.
Okay.
All right.
So, you know, you no matter what, you are going to pay that gain if you don't reinvest. Some people are telling me, you know, mostly lay people, that there was a period of time where you wouldn't, if you owned it over a period of time, you wouldn't actually pay capital gains, but it looks pretty clear that you do.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any exception. If it was a principal residence, my answer would differ, but yours is a rental property, so the principal residence rules from the past or currently don't even apply.
All right, there you have it, Alex. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll take some more of your tax questions as well. We can do it either via phone or via email. Our guest today, Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. And he'll be with us right up till 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your taxes today with Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheryl Gasser answering the phones today, our on-air producer. Glad to have you listening in. And the lines are filled, but the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Terry in Pewaukee.
Larry?
Yes,
can I
ahead.
Just go back to our very first caller?
Yeah, absolutely.
The first caller said she installed a new furnace and through a couple of agencies received a rebate. And the issue was, do you have to reduce your cost by the rebate? And it's not one that I looked at, but over the break I looked it up. There's a code section. It's section 136A that provides you don't have to include that rebate in income. It makes it excludable from income. But then there's section 136B says it denies a double benefit. All right, since you didn't have to include it in income, you got to reduce your cost by the rebate, and therefore, so if you had a $4,000 cost and you got $500 in rebates, you can only count $3,500 of a property. Unlike, you know, somebody thought they had the answer, but it was the wrong answer. So it's Section 136 of the Internal Revenue Code that provides us the answers.
All right, there we have it.
First time I've ever looked at it.
Well, we both learned something then today.
Exactly right. So I kind of suspected that might be the case, but I had not had the issue, so I don't try to guess. If I don't know, I'll tell you I don't know.
Let's go to Terry in Pewaukee then. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Great show. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
I have a question regarding I had some money on IRA account with a financial advisor who was just extremely poor, so I switched to another financial advisor. The second advisor made his charge for his fee up front. Is that deductible that he took the charge from the IRA?
Okay. If it comes from the IRA, you cannot deduct it because it's taken out of the IRA. If you pay it yourself, which you can do, then you can deduct it as a miscellaneous itemized deduction. In your case, for most taxpayers, it's going to work better out of the IRA because miscellaneous itemized deductions are only deductible to the extent they exceed 2% of your income.
Okay.
And then if you have an alternative minimum tax problem, even though you get over that 2% threshold, you're going to find that it doesn't save you a penny. Wisconsin does not provide any benefit from miscellaneous itemized deductions. It's not part of the itemized deduction credit. So at least if it comes out of the IRA, you're reducing, assuming it's not a Roth IRA, you're reducing the taxable benefit, the amount in which you'll pay tax in the future. So at least you're getting a benefit from it that way because it'll reduce the taxable amount coming out of the IRA in the future.
All right. There you have it. Thank you, Terry. Amy in Red Wing, Minnesota. We're on to you now. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my question.
You're welcome.
I don't mean to beat this question to death, but I've got a little different scenario here on the $6,500 tax credit for a new home.
Mm-hmm.
We lived at our house for 10 years and then demolished it and broke ground on a new home, and we'll be mortgaging it here within the next month or so. And I'm wondering if we qualify for that $6,500 credit.
I certainly think you would. You lived in the old five or out of the last 8 years, and you're putting up a new one. You're building a new one. It's going to be placed in service after November 7th, right?
Well, we closed on the construction loan in October, but we'll be financing the mortgage here any day.
Yeah. When will the house be complete?
The house will be complete probably early April.
Yeah, early April. Okay, again, this is a situation I haven't had. Intuitively, it feels like you get a new house being completed after November 7th that it would seem to be eligible, although you're straddling the date you probably started before. So would you only be able to count expenditures after November 7th? I haven't had this situation. So, again, you should do some homework on that one.
Okay.
But I think my guess is I would think you would be eligible, but I haven't had your situation. So.
Okay.
But
well,
I think it's worth pursuing.
Yep. Thanks for calling, Amy. And Mary in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. My question is regarding a 1098 that my daughter received for tuition. And it's in her Social Security. I mean, it has her Social Security number on it. But we most likely will be claiming her as a dependent as she's still a student.
Yes.
Is that a problem?
Not a problem at all.
Okay.
If you claim a student as a dependent, then you're eligible to count on your return the tuition that's paid for the tuition deduction and or credits, as the case may be. Where are you from?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Okay. And does your daughter go to Wisconsin school?
Yes.
All right. Then you've got, what year is she in?
She's, this is her fourth year.
Fourth year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then basically, you're probably looking at the new American Opportunity Credit?
I haven't started looking at the forms yet. I just started to do her taxes, and then I started to think about this question.
Mm-hmm. Form 8863 is the form for that. This year's instruction contains a nice little chart that walks you through. We used to have two credits, the HOPE credit and the Lifetime Learning credit.
Correct.
And then the new one is American Opportunity Credit. And the reason I asked you what year she was, if you're eligible for the old HOPE credit, there was a Midwest disaster special benefit, mm-hmm. but that only applies to your first 2 years in school. And the maximum credit there would be, $3,600 rather than the American Opportunity Credit, which the max is $25. But I think you're going to find the American Opportunity Credit is the one that you'll want to use.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And I think Mike in Waukesha has something relating to the education disaster relief as well. Mike, hi.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
My question is also about educational tax credits. My wife and I are married and filing jointly. She returned to school last year, so she quit her job. She's going to school at UW Whitewater, which is in Walworth County. We live in Waukesha County. And in noodling through Form 8863, it looks like we do apply for the Midwest Disaster Area Relief Credit.
It only applies. Did your wife go to school before?
No, this is her first year of going back to school.
Okay, and she didn't go to school before.
She already has a bachelor's degree in engineering, and she's going back to become a teacher.
Yeah, then your problem is the old HOPE credit only applies for the first 2 years of post-secondary education. All right, so she already has a four-year degree. And then the new American Opportunity Credit only applies for the first 4 years. But there's a Lifetime Learning Credit, which is would be available to you because there is no you know limit on the first 4 years or 2 years, as the case may be. So you should look at the Lifetime Learning Credit. That's Walworth County for UW-Whitewater, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Walworth County is one of the disaster areas, so the Lifetime Learning Credit is 20% of the first 10,000, but that gets doubled to 4,000 for UW-Whitewater and many other Wisconsin universities.
Okay, so that applies elsewhere, too, then. Dane County, might it apply?
Yes, it does. Dane County, Milwaukee County, Waukesha, there's I don't know how many of the counties, there's a bunch of counties, probably about, I would guess, maybe half of the counties. So the very last page of the 8863 instructions, Form 8863 instructions, shows which states and which counties. It's where the school is located, where you're eligible to get the benefit from the Midwestern Disaster Area Credit.
That doubles the amount, doubles the amount of tuition that we can deduct the 20% of. It does not double the 20%. Is that correct?
It doubles it from, it goes from 2,000 to 4,000 for the Lifetime Learning Credit. So the credit rate is still 20%, but the dollar limitation goes up to 20.
It goes up another 20.
So it goes up from 10 to 20,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for that. And that applies to graduate school or other?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Most of the other credits, you have to be at least like a half-time student or, you know, a full-time student. But the lifetime learning credit, you don't have to be, pursuing a degree necessarily.
All right. Let's turn to Kevin in Sun Prairie then. Kevin, hello to you.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just had two quick questions. I'm getting married soon, and I would like to know if there's any advantages from being not married to the state and just having the ceremony. And then my second question was, I wanted to hear his thoughts on if there's any advantages or benefits of Congress passing a bill to audit the Federal Reserve. And that's it.
Okay. On the... tax, whether it's higher or lower, whether you marry or you don't marry, it is factual dependent. And I can give you some generalizations here, but, you know, you really need to push the numbers to confirm them. If both spouses make about the same amount of money and have similar amounts in taxable income, in more cases than not, in most cases, you'll pay more tax on a married joint return than you will on two single taxpayer returns. If one spouse has higher income and another spouse has lower income, then chances are you'll pay less tax on a joint return than you will on separate returns as single taxpayers. One other thing that's going to change in 2011, Bush administration gave us some tax cuts, and there was some marriage penalty relief. For example, the standard deduction for a married couple right now is exactly twice the amount as for a single person. And then the rate brackets, some of the lower rate brackets, they're exactly twice the single brackets on the married joint schedule. After 2010, those benefits are likely going to go away, and unless they're reinstated, the marriage penalty could be more in the future. So we'll have to see what future tax legislation holds. But what I would suggest you do is if that's the determinant of why you're going to marry or not, you'll just have to push a pencil and see where the numbers come out. Then, relative to your second question, that's not an area of expertise of mine about whether the federal government's going to audit the Federal Reserve, so I'll take a pass on that one.
All right. Let's turn to Lynn in Evansville. Lynn, hello.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I need to give, this has to do with a sale of a home out of state, but I need to provide a little context. In the 1980s, my parents went to an attorney to make legal arrangements for their assets, and as an unmarried child, their home was placed in my name in part to protect it from my mother should my dad pass first, which actually happened. So the home upon my dad's death was placed in my name to protect her. In 1980, the intention was that I would take care of her and I would move to New York to provide for her and in her older age. What happened is she died suddenly following a fall in the 2008. She died after a fall. And rather than moving there in a large home, which would have been good for two of us but not for me, and my health benefits would be reduced by moving from Wisconsin to New York, the decision was made to sell that home. It sold in February of 2009, and my question is, if this is the first time I've ever sold a home, and it is in New York State, but I reside in Wisconsin, could you provide me with any guidance as to the consequences of that?
So she died in 2008, you said?
Yeah, she died in 2008.
So the home was put in your name, but mother continued to live there.
Yes, and the ownership only transferred upon her death.
Yeah.
So in 2008, the house was transferred to me.
Well, but you told me, I'm confused, because you said earlier in your conversation that legal, that title, the deed was put in your name, but that's not true then.
The house
not,
was...
There was some illegal arrangement with her attorney, elder attorney, such that it was put in my name to protect the asset, but I would only have full ownership, as I understood it, and I have to go back to the legal document.
Okay. Your mother had the right to live there till she died.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So she had a retained life estate.
Okay,
under Section 2036 of the Internal Revenue Code.
Okay, thank
if
you.
If you transfer property and you retain a life estate.
That was it.
From an estate tax perspective, it's as if you didn't transfer the property at all. The value of the house would be properly includable in your mother's gross estate. Now, she may not have had enough assets that she had to file an estate tax return at all.
Right.
But the significance of that to you is if the asset is properly includable in the estate, then the benefit of that is on death, you get a date of death value basis step up. So it would seem to me, you know, based on what you've told me, you should bear that out with the facts based on legal title and the arrangement that you actually had, is if that's the case, then your tax basis would be the value of the home at the date of death of your mother.
Okay.
And, again, even though it's the I was advised at one point that since it's the first time I'd ever had a house to sell, that there's an exclusion. That's not true.
Not for you, because you have to own and occupy the house as your principal residence for 2 out of the 5 years before you sell it.
Okay.
And it's not your principal residence.
Well, there you have it.
Although it was intended to be, I didn't actually live there.
No, you wouldn't be eligible for that. But I think your basis step-up will help you out.
Yeah, that should help a lot. Thanks, Lynn, for calling. Appreciate it. Debbie in Avoca will turn to you now. Hi, Debbie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of questions. One question is, my parents put in new windows in their home, and they when they filed their taxes, they didn't get that energy credit.
Okay.
Is there a limit as to what you can make in order to get that, or?
No. Not on the residential energy credit. There's no phase-out on the credit based on income, such as there is with the first-time homebuyer credit, but not on the residential energy credit. So if they made the improvements in 2009 and the windows met the certification requirements, you got to check that, because not all windows qualify. You just need to make sure they meet the energy efficiency requirements. And if they met that and they are eligible to claim it and they didn't, what you should do is complete Form 5695 for the residential energy credit and the Form 1040X to claim
the credit.
So to the qualification for windows, you got to meet an Energy Star rated at 0.30 U factor or less. So whatever that means.
0.30 U factor.
Whatever that means.
So.
Thanks, Debbie. We had another email from someone who, on this home efficiency credit, as long as we're on to that a little bit, can I claim $1,500 home efficiency credit for new home construction?
You know, I don't believe so. Under the prior version of that, you know, for 2007, I believe that new homes qualified. I don't think that's the case anymore.
No.
As I read the instructions a month or two ago, it seemed to me that the new property was no longer eligible. It had to be an existing home.
Yeah.
So I think there was when the credit got reinstated. I think we got a different answer on that. Where new homes before, I knew they qualified, and I don't believe they do anymore.
All right. Joy in West Bend, on to you. Hi, Joy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
My husband and I bought a zero coupon bond for our daughter for college expenses. When we bought it, the man who did the arrangement said that we wouldn't have to pay taxes on it, because it would be in her name. So all the years, we didn't pay taxes on it, and then it became mature this last year, and we cashed it in.
Type of zero-coupon bond? Who was the issuer?
It was the government.
State? Federal?
Federal.
Okay.
And so now, I assume that since it's been cashed in, someone has to pay taxes on that. Who pays taxes on it? What kind of form do we use?
Well, normally when there are zero coupon bonds issued, original issue discount rules apply. And effectively, as interest accretes, it becomes taxable then. Now, there's exceptions. U.S. savings bonds, that's not true. You can report either when you cash them in or you can report the interest each year. But most other obligations that are issued at original issue discount, you have to report the interest each year, and you get a 1099 OID reporting that income. And so I'm wondering if you haven't received that 1099 all along. So your issue is you know, did the original issue discount rules apply? And if they did, the interest was reportable all along. It's only the current year's interest that would be reportable.
Okay.
So go back to the person you bought that from or whatever to see if they can't help you out. Oftentimes the brokers, when they issue a zero coupon, they will give you what's called an accretion schedule, which shows you how much you'll have to report in income each year.
Uh-huh.
And I would expect that would be your situation based on what you've described.
Okay, so if that's the case and we haven't paid that every year, then what?
Then years beyond 3 years for federal and four for Wisconsin would be closed. You don't have to worry about those. And then, if the dollar amount were large enough, you could amend for the open years.
Okay.
I'm still confused. Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Have you heard about the new rules regarding IRA to Roth, IRA conversion rules that has passed the Wisconsin legislature? Has it?
I don't know that it's passed its law yet, but it's being worked on. The problem is, from a federal perspective, anybody can convert a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA starting with 2010. But Wisconsin didn't adopt those provisions initially, and they are working on it right now. Matter of fact, I got an email dated February 16th from Senator Bob Jauch, who's in the state Senate. I am pleased to inform you that the state Senate took up the IRA Roth legislation and unanimously adopted it this afternoon. That's dated February 16th. The legislation now goes to the Assembly, where I expect early consideration and adoption before it is signed into law by the governor. So I haven't seen that it's been enacted yet, but we're close.
Steve, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. You'll come back and be with us again?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Steve Schmidt is a certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. And I'm really pleased to have him with us. And he'll be back next month, and we will go through this again. I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone, but that's always the way it works. Just to let you know, coming up tomorrow, we've got Garden Talk, and Melinda Myers of Milwaukee will be our guest. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.